Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and this week I'd like to take a look at the regional elections in Russia and also the talks between Russian President Vladimir Putin and Alexander Lukashenko of Belarus, who are meeting today in Sochi. I'm joined today by Moscow correspondent Matthew Luxmore. Matthew, let's start with the elections. They were held over 3 days, ending yesterday, under the new law allowing for that. I believe governors were being elected in 18 regions, that is elected by voters, and legislatures in 11 regions. And then there were a number of municipal elections all across the country and a few by-elections to fill vacated seats in the State Duma, the national parliament. Now, as is often the case, these elections were seen as a test for both Putin and the dominant United Russia Party, which is one of his main levers of power nationwide. Matthew, how was the backdrop of these elections different from some in the past, and what was at stake?
Well, the most immediate backdrop, at least from the opposition's perspective, was the very murky poisoning of Russia's most prominent opposition leader, Alexei Navalny, who, you know, continues to recover in Berlin's Charité Hospital, and also ongoing mass protests in Russia's Far East, which, you know, according to protesters there, you know, are driven very much by, you know, a widespread sense that voters have been ignored. In 2018, they elected a governor, Sergei Furgal, who surprised the Kremlin by beating the United Russia candidate. And 2 months ago, he was arrested and flown to Moscow to face trial on 15-year-old murder charges that he denies. So Moscow is certainly keen to avoid the kind of scenario that led to, you know, Furgal's election 2 years ago. And this year, the election build-up has seen widespread efforts to clamp down on the opposition. The regional branches of Navalny's political campaign have been raided by police and attacked by apparent thugs who, in at least one instance, fled the scene. So, you know, for the opposition, it's not a great shock to the system since they face such tactics regularly. But this year, Navalny's allies took it as evidence that their strategy of so-called smart voting, which urges voters to select the politician who's most likely to defeat United Russia's candidate, is at least effective enough to spook the authorities. In the end, as we see United Russia, in the results are in now, the United Russia has claimed sweeping victories across Russia, you know, amid pretty widespread claims of violations, and right, also the whole controversy, as you mentioned, surrounding the new 3-day voting system, which critics say only widens the opportunities for fraud. But, you know, they didn't win everywhere. Most symbolic, perhaps, is the Siberian city of Tomsk, where Navalny was the place he was almost certainly poisoned, and where two of his allies have won seats in the local parliament, according to results we have at the moment. And also Novosibirsk, where the head of Navalny's local team has claimed a seat on the city council. Each of those candidates have featured in recent video exposés released by Navalny into local corruption, you know, highlighting political manipulations in the regions. So his allies will most likely see at least those two victories as a vindication of their strategy, and also maybe, as some have said since, you know, evidence that Navalny is more popular in the regions than the authorities and his critics like to suggest. United Russia, on the other hand, I think will probably consider this a job well done, especially as various polls show that the party has lost popularity throughout Russia. So this victory, as you mentioned as well, is kind of a stress test for next year's parliamentary elections, where a lot more will be at stake, I think.
Right, absolutely. And I mean, I've mentioned it's a good point about, you know, the possibility that Navalny's, you know, popularity is not only in Moscow among supporters. I mean, obviously he ran in Moscow mayoral elections in 2013 and won almost a third, I guess, of the vote, almost 30% of the vote. But, you know, often he's been written off as being, you know, kind of a Moscow-centric figure. But of course, he has led protests or organized protests nationwide in the past. But I think you're right in terms of also the idea that United Russia or the Kremlin, you know, may see this these elections as kind of a success, or at least on some of the strategies of cracking down, maybe as a success. But I think another takeaway that some will have is the idea. I mean, you mentioned the 3-day voting. That it's kind of like it's getting harder and harder to even harder to expect elections to have sort of a real outcome that reflects the will of the people. I think Kremlin critics would say. So to some degree, you know, it's a show, I think.
Absolutely.
I mean, I guess you mentioned claims of fraud, and you know, one thing that makes these different, you know, is Navalny's kind of not there. He's not there to comment. I mean, others obviously also making claims and trying to monitor the elections. There's Golos, the independent monitoring agency, but you know, Navalny's been sort of a coordinator of that sort of thing, so it changes the landscape, you know, in the wake of the elections a bit as well.
I think the opposition also wanted to prove that in his absence they can still stage a pretty pretty dogged campaign to get their candidates elected. So they may see this also as proof that he isn't absolutely indispensable to the movement, at least while he's away.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. All right. Well, let's move on to Belarus, or rather Lukashenko's meeting with Putin. Not entirely unrelated, because I think the disputed election in Belarus may have been a factor to some degree in the Russian elections. I mean, part of the backdrop. Anyway, it's the first known face-to-face meeting between the two since the election in Belarus on August 9th. I'm not up on whether the meeting has been said to have been started. I know Lukashenko was on his way to Russia earlier. Matthew, I'm not going to go into the background much at this point, but I guess one question again is what's at stake? And another question, hard to answer right now, is, you know, there's certainly no signing expected, no press conference expected after the meeting either, according to Putin's spokesman. Do you think we'll actually learn much about what was discussed?
I don't. I mean, besides the fact that, the meeting will be closed, it will be behind closed doors, no press access. I suspect much of what we learn will be confined to, you know, the so-called realm of criminology, except the information that we might glean from Putin's spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, who's traditionally the only kind of official source on what's actually taking place inside the Kremlin. But, considering the stakes here, it's not surprising that the meeting will not be public, I think. Lukashenko has seemingly pulled out all the stops to suppress the protests that have been happening daily since his disputed re-election on August 9th, with security forces brutally beating detained protesters, including yesterday, and state media with over Russian support waging a pretty dirty propaganda campaign to discredit the opposition movement. Those tactics have clearly done little to help. We've seen tens and perhaps hundreds of thousands even taken to the streets over the past 5 Sundays. That's excluding the other daily, much smaller protests that have been taking place. And while the turnout on August 16th, I believe, was probably a record, the rallies have hardly dwindled much in size since then. So I think, anyone suggesting that they're somehow on the way out and that people have been cowed would be wrong. At least the evidence suggests otherwise. So, for further Russian support could be Lukashenko's only option at this stage. That doesn't, of course, mean that Moscow will give it, at least not on Lukashenko's terms. It's likely to continue backing his continued rule in Belarus, but Putin will almost certainly look to extract concessions that may involve Belarus ceding more of its sovereignty to Russia, its powerful eastern neighbor. The two leaders may also discuss some kind of power transition in Belarus, either, you know, in the coming months or further down the road, a transition they can manage. So that, you know, that's obviously likely to ignite further protest if opposition leaders are not included in the dialogue. But the last thing I think Putin wants is, you know, seeing a friendly leader toppled by street protests, especially in a country so close to Russia. So as far as gleaning the content of today's meeting and whatever agreements are made, you know, I think it's quite likely that events on the ground in Belarus and, you know, Lukashenko's strategy in the days to come will probably, you know, it may well be kind of the best clues we'll get.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think we'll probably hear from Peskov and also from the Belarusian side. And of course, you know, there have been after previous phone calls since the Belarusian election between Putin and Lukashenko, there have been, you know, comments by Lukashenko or by his people, you know, that the Kremlin hasn't really confirmed or has only partially confirmed. So, you know, it'll be a matter of reading if both sides make comments, it'll be a matter of reading, you know, reading between the lines of those. You know, I guess I'll be watching it to see, you know, as you mentioned, what kind of signs there are of Putin and Russia trying to extract concessions in terms of, you know, closer integration. You know, the Kremlin is claiming to have very, very kind of low, you know, or almost non-existent ambitions on that score at this point. But that, I think, is clearly not the case. And also be watching it to see what, you know, you mentioned the possibility of a transition. Lukashenko made an interesting comment when he said he might have overstayed his welcome a bit. You know, possibly that was a throwaway comment, possibly not. Mm. But, you know, obviously, as you say, Russia, Putin, the Kremlin, they want to have a hand in whatever does, a strong hand, in whatever does take place from now on. So it'll be something to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. We're running out of time. We're going to have to wrap it up for today. Matthew, great to have you on the podcast again. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. I'll be back with another edition of The Week Ahead in Russia next Monday. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for my newsletter, The Week in Russia. Thanks for listening.